Blog Talk Radio.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm part of the Neighborhood Crime Watch. The way this works is you watch, I commit the crime.
Oh, my God. No.
There's no talking. You just give me your watch and wallet now.
Here's my problem. You're black.
Mr. Crane!
What? I'm Danny Crane. I'm a big shot.
So am I.
If you kill me, the headline's going to be Black Guy Kills White Big Shot. And that's the last thing we need when we're trying to elect an African-American as president.
God. How about if I just blow your brains out right now?
That doesn't work for me. Work for you?
Please. Hey.
All right. Watch. Wallet. Gun. Knee. Right foot. Left foot. Thank God for guns, huh, Jay?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
I'm Afro Nerd. I'm a big shot.
Folks, trust me, I love that William Shatner clip from Boston Legal. Definitely right on point, very entertaining, to say the least. Folks, welcome to the midweek edition of Afner featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afner Radio. Folks, the call-in number, don't be scared, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We have a lot to cover. Coming back from yesterday's stellar performance by our president, during Hofstra University's debates. That's, of course, the great Mr. Stark's haunting grounds. That's his alma mater. He's a graduate of Hofstra University. So we'll talk about it among other topics. But first, we've got to get into the groove. This is War. Edwin Starr's War, but performed by Rage Against the Machine. Let's get into it. Tom Morello from Harlem. Let's go.
I wonder what it would be like to sail on an ocean with the bitter tears of those who lost their loved ones to a stranger. How many stadiums could you fill with all the people killed in war? Now you look me in my eyes and tell me what it's good for.
What is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
time they got prepared for Armageddon, soon to be judgment. They still make a big mistake. How many mistakes in life with death? They fuck to me, how did they feel? Survivors doesn't revive, it's better to kill if it's my will. Step out of my battlefield, look down, I might have to smoke. Yeah, when I roll stupid, this game, focus, shoot through my skull. Oh, now that's my mighty, mighty voice, yes, I'm in a mighty, mighty truth. Still on the rise, you better get you dying, none of my makes it true. We're stopping the two-club boots and shooting up in fatigue. Killing off your army, throw up the white flag every tree. So many soldiers, so many stories of war. But where does it come from, limited doubts? The world is over, the future is here. War, war,
war. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing, nothing.
All right. Okay. Enough of that. Again, folks, that was the great Tom Morello, Harlem's Tom Morello, Harvard-bred Tom Morello, probably one of the most underrated guitarists of our time, with Rage Against the Machine covering Edwin Starr's War, the classic R&B joint, giving you the best of urban alternative, black rock, afro-punk, you name it, we will play it. This is Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Call a number once again, 646-915-9620. And getting into the fold, meeting my partner in White Collar Crime, we do need to hear from Captain Kirk. Captain, let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Exhibitor from Comic-Con, is here.
Yeah, he's referencing his special designation status at last weekend's New York Comic-Con. 100,000-plus people, folks, definitely rivaling the San Diego imprint of the comic convention. Folks, we have a lot to get into. This is the 17th of October, 2012, the year of our Lord, and we have to talk about the obvious elephant in the room, perhaps in this case the donkey in the room, because of our President of the United States' performance. He is back, appears to have risen like the mythical phoenix, and he needed to do so. He had no choice, Captain. He had no choice but to bring it, and I would suspect, at least the media, they are, you know, they're going to tell you what they think. The consensus thus far is that he won last night's debate. What were your thoughts before we go to a quick news clip?
Now, here's the thing. Before, I have to always do the prerequisite before I totally get into it now. Totally get into it. Here's the prerequisite course. Number one, I never really trust the media. Two, I don't really trust the polls. All right? Now, let me tell you why. Let me tell you why. When you have watched a lot of these pollings, and when people are going to vote and they tell you via exit polls, which a lot of times they only have 2% of the vote in, and they're predicting the winner. Now, stop right there. How can you predict anything with only 2% of the vote in? I could see if you had 30% of the vote in, then you could make an educated guess via statistical analysis. It still might not be right, but it at least makes sense to the layman's man, the man on the street. But when you only have 2% in, and you're right, not to sound like a conspiracy theorist. Now, I'm just saying something is fishy. Something is very fishy. Now, we also know in the 70s and the 80s, we weren't using a lot of computers. When you're doing things with computers now in 2012, it can get a little funny. That's all the captain is saying. So be very careful when you see polls. That's one thing. The second thing now, the media. The first time when Obama and Romney had their debate, they jumped all over it. They were like, oh, Obama did this. Romney killed him. Now, Obama comes back very strong. The media is like, maybe he edged him. Maybe he did. Some people still feel that Romney got it and everything else. It's like there's two sides. The military complex prefers Romney. The banker complex prefers Obama. And I'm going to tell you why. Okay? Romney has Russia as the enemy. That's the military standpoint. Obama has China as the enemy. That's the banker standpoint, because there's no central bank in China. There's also no central bank in Iran and also North Korea. So from that standpoint. So you have two different standpoints. Now, that being said, you have to be very careful when it comes to the media and when it comes to the polls and also what's backing the two individuals. Now, that being said, getting into the debate, I think both Romney and Obama, they were both nebulous and vague, but that's okay, meaning which they were not really answering the questions. But that's okay, because it's not really about answering the questions. What this is about, winning and grandstanding and posturing and showing people I am the man. And on this particular debate, Obama was the man. Obama, from my opinion is correct, taking words from the great Bible B from the comic shop, my opinion is correct. Obama edged him out, clearly, clearly. So what's supposed to be happening right now all out through the media, just how they were blasting it out when Romney had the edge from their standpoint. I thought the first one was somewhat kind of, you know, closer. Obama just wasn't his typical self. The media is supposed to be saying, Obama destroyed him. Obama did this. Obama did this. Obama is back. Obama, wait. No, they're just saying, oh, well, you know, some people are saying Obama had the edge. Be very careful with the media. Be very careful, because my opinion is correct. Obama clearly had the edge. And that's what I saw. And back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Well, before I give you my opinion, I think we might want to hear the opinion of the vice president, the current vice president, Mr. Biden. He was asked on ABC News of his opinion of the debate, the second debate especially. So let's go to him. It's about 3 minutes, folks. Let's get into it. This is ABC News, George Stephanopoulos, asking our VP his opinion of his boss, his performance. Let's get to it. ABC News, George Stephanopoulos. Hold on.
Let's turn to the running mates in the corner for their candidates. I spoke with Vice President Biden late last night and began by asking him to explain why President Obama brought such a different game to this second debate.
I tell you what, the Obama that I've worked with, the president I've worked with, the guy passionately committed to doing something about the plight of the middle class, he was there last night. I thought he did an incredible job of pointing out what he did, what we're going to do, and I thought it was incredible that Governor Romney had nothing but a sketchy response to everything. I mean, whether it was that young college kid asking him about a job, he kept saying, I want you to get a job, I want you to get a job, or whether it was about, this is the third debate we've had on their tax policy. They've yet to come up with a single solitary specific.
What did you say to him after that first debate that got such a different performance last night?
We talked after the first debate. We talked after my debate. I didn't have any doubt about how the president would perform in this debate. That's the guy I see in command. He's the guy I know.
We saw Mitt Romney really tighten up in the polls after that first debate. Did the president stop the slide last night?
I don't know what the polls are going to say, but I feel very, very good about going into the next 20 days or so. I think it's 20 days. Because I think that people are getting a clear and clear outline of how vague the assertions are of Romney and Ryan, very little detail. And I think the reason there's very little detail, George, is they don't want to say what their policies will do.
One of the big moments in the debate last night, that moment where both the president and Governor Romney talking about Benghazi, and Governor Romney calling out the president saying he wasn't referring to the act of terror against the consulate in Benghazi in that Rose Garden statement the next day. His campaign is saying that Candy Crowley was wrong on that, and I wonder what your response to that is.
Well, the response is it became so clear to the American people how Governor Romney and the campaign continue to try to politicize a tragedy, and their strategy seems to be to try to make it appear that the president didn't care or didn't know or was lying. The fact of the matter is the president was clear. We are going to get to the bottom of this. The whole world will know it. And I think when the president turned and looked at Governor Romney and made that assertion, saying basically, don't question me on this in terms of my caring, I thought it was a powerful moment.
Before you go, I got to ask you about your own debate. Almost a week out now, how are you feeling about it? You took some ribbing for all those smiles and laughs.
Well, I tell you what, I recommend everybody go back and find that Saturday Night Live deal they did. I have to admit, I laughed my head off watching the guy playing me. He is so good, it scares me. But look, I feel very good about the debate because, again, I wasn't going to sit there and and let all these assertions go by that just simply were not accurate.
Stakes are high for Monday night.
Yeah, they are, but I think I feel confident about my boss. I feel confident about my guy, and I think the American people are becoming more confident that Romney doesn't offer much of an alternative.
Mr. Vice President, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
All right, folks, once again, that was George Stephanopoulos from ABC News interviewing our Vice President, Joe Biden. Couple of things. Again, folks, Hafner featuring Captain Kirk, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Feel free to buzz in if you like to add to the discourse. Anyway, back to the debates. A couple of things, ancillary things I'd like to mention. I just heard something before the broadcast, Captain, about Deborah Lee. Deborah Lee is the president of BET, and she has gotten quite a bit of criticism for over the last couple of years because of the perception that BET gives. It gives out this perception of minstrelsy, that they promote or promulgate minstrelsy, bad entertainment, stereotypical entertainment, what have you. Many years ago, BET did possess a news presence. Anyway, I've got to do a little research because I just heard this. But I have to do some due diligence, some research as to what she said specifically. But just kind of giving you an around the cuff thing as to what she was saying. She herself, sitting president now, has been very critical of BET's content. Now, normally, last few years, she's been put on the defense. I mean, there's been points. She resides in Washington, or I know she has a residence in Washington, where they've had protests of being tribal here, of black folk, protests against BET. Now, what does this have to do with the debate? When she said that the content is poor and that I think she mentioned something about the newsworthiness or the news-telling ability of BET, it reminds me that in order for President Obama to succeed, not that he will not, but I think it would be a lot more succinct, a lot more resonating if there were a truly involved black media on the side of this thing, a black media also framing what's going on with President Barack Obama and what's happening with Romney's campaign. At one of the recent Romney rallies, there was they're pointing to one person, might have been more, but there was one person that was wearing a T-shirt that clearly said, let's put the white back into the White House, okay? And there's been other allusions to racial crap on the side of Romney. Not that Romney himself is endorsing this, but his followers are definitely putting it out there. If you had a major black media presence honing in on that, most definitely getting into this whole deal of, the lack of credibility on the part of the Romney campaign. We could talk about all the other things, the $7 trillion figure that Barack Obama was able to put out against Governor Romney. You know, there's things that Barack Obama is doing on his own. But if you had a strong black media presence to hone on this hypocrisy on the part of some of the Romney electorate, it's one thing to honestly critique Barack Obama's progressive stance on policy. That's legitimate. Irrespective of whoever sits in that White House, you have to be fair and you have to give him due criticism. But when you have things with allusions to monkeys, you know, loose monkey talk, disrespect towards the family, disrespect towards the First Lady, these wild T-shirts, you lose all credibility. Now, unfortunately, I don't see the black media there to hone in on that, to complement the other things that Barack Obama has been able to, at least at this point now from yesterday's performance, effectively get into some of the his special word now, sketchy politics, sketchy proposals by Governor Romney. I thought that, if anything, and the captain was correct on this, it's debatable as to just how bad Barack Obama's performance was from the first debate. It's debatable. I will say, again, referencing the captain, this is more about posturing alpha dogs on display, and the public having to see this alleged body language. He was very much more aggressive, more passionate, more awake. I don't know if those things are substantive. I don't know. Barack Obama is far more to the chagrin of the right, and I'm a conservative, but to the right, to their chagrin, he is more cerebral, more professorial. They've actually made former Governor Sarah Palin has made professorial, and even Sean Hannity and crew have made the term professorial a pejorative. Since when, folks, is being smart, being on the ball, being sharp, since when is that a pejorative? Since when is it a negative? They've actually made certain things into a negative. Even the First Lady's health initiative with our youth, they've made that into a negative. You know, we're going to go to a musical break. I just want to make this quick point, and then we'll have to move on to another topic. We are talking about the legal community. We're talking about governance as well, but we are talking about the legal community at its heart. And with legal representation, you have to take or defend the indefensible on occasion. Someone had to defend I'm trying to think of the murderer's name, Captain. I had him at the tip of my tongue now. The murderer, the cannibal from years ago. You know what I'm thinking about, Captain? Captain. Hold on. Let me bring in the captain. My memory's failing me.
It escapes me. It escapes you right now also.
Jesus. Anyway.
Yes.
Why can't I think of this cannibal's name? He was killed in prison. I'm stuck. Jeff Dahmer. Yeah. Oh,
okay.
The ginseng actually kicked in after 5 minutes. Okay. So someone had to defend Jeffrey Dahmer. Okay? That's just the way the legal system works. That's the way jurisprudence is. It has to be that way. And there's parts of what's going on with the right where they have to take positions just because you have to. You have to say that the initiative that the First Lady has taken is problematic and that it's quote-unquote wrong. But the reality is, trying to push for good health or reasonable health initiatives for our youth, that's just, you just can't make that wrong. So there's things going on the right that they're saying about the Barack Obama administration that they just have to do. But it doesn't mean that what on its own, if you look at it squarely in the center, that some of the initiatives, not everything, but some of what Barack Obama has done or is doing, it just is. It's not really right or wrong. But they have to take a position. They have to defend the indefensible. And that's what lawyers do. They have to. That's just the way the legal system is. So a lot of what they are saying is just malarkey to take a word from Biden. I know folks are going to probably deem me as a rhino or Republican in name only. And there's a lot more about that also. There's a lot more coming in with what's happening on the right with really disparaging the moderate faction of their party, which is going to be their downfall, folks. That's my opinion. That's going to be their downfall, is this whole deal of disparaging folks that simply do not believe in extremism. That's all. All right, you know, Captain, I want to talk about where should we go with this? I think we're going to talk about Dinesh D'Souza, actually. Oh, boy. See, once again, you have these fools coming through that take these hardline positions, and then something comes out of the closet, and you look like a hypocrite. You never want to look like a hypocrite, folks. We'll talk about Dinesh D'Souza in a moment. Let's get to a quick groove. This is 100 miles per hour. Maserati, there's a Maserati version from the 80s, but this is actually His Royal Badness's version. He is the writer of this song. So this is the Prince version of 100 miles per hour. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Thank you.
Folks, once again, actually a Maserati classic, but it was penned by Prince. That is 100 miles per hour. Folks, welcome to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, talking about the debates, at least from the last segment. Now we want to move forward, and I want to talk about a growing controversy. It's not a non-troversy. It's a controversy. It's a hypocrisy. And actually, this is a gentleman that I would like to get on the show. I know that someone else, one of the other shows on Blog Talk, they were fortunate enough to have Dinesh D'Souza and Ann Coulter double billing a few weeks ago. So you may want to check that out. Just simply do a quick search through Blog Talk for Dinesh D'Souza and Ann Coulter. And I would like to have both these individuals together or individually. So I'm putting out my feelers to try to get these individuals on the show. Anyway, Dinesh D'Souza, for those who are unfamiliar with this gentleman, he is a Indian-American conservative political commentator, author. He's the president of King's College. And at one point I was hesitant to say someone is a hustler. At some point I was hesitant to say that someone was a hustler. But over the years, it's pretty blatant that whether you are on the right, left, or in the center, there's some characters. That's what I'm going to call them. Some characters that you just know, they run along a certain kind of shtick, and the shtick never changes. See, I respect someone that gives you more honest discourse, where it's not always thematic. You know, Ann Coulter comes out. She has a new book out now. I can't recollect the title of the book, but it has something to do about race. It's a race-centered book. And her issues are always against the left. Not that the left can't be critiqued. Not that the right can't be critiqued. I think no one is above criticism. But it's always the same theme. And she comes out with these provocative statements. You know, it comes off less by happenstance. To someone on occasion, or you know, as casual discussion, something comes out that might pique a few nerves or prick a few nerves, then I can understand that. But this is something that happens every time it's time to sell a book. Every time product has to be pushed, she is out there with some wacky statement to get people incensed. And I don't know why folks kind of just go for this all the time. It's a repeated thing where we just fall right in line. And Dinesh D'Souza seems to fall into that same category. Now, he has a film out now called 2016 Obama's America. And to date, it is the highest grossing conservative documentary made in the U.S. to date. Came right in time for the elections. So it's right on time. And yet another book about, I think it was The Rage of Obama. You know, it's all these themes. Obama's rage, and he critiques Obama's relationship with his father. And I don't know if there's any evidence of Obama having this quote-unquote rage. Anyway, where the hypocrisy comes in now. Just to give you a background, more background on Mr. D'Souza. He is a Catholic. Now, some would say, well, how can he be of Indian descent and be a Catholic? Well, actually, there's a, you know, people forget that, again, he was from Bombay, India, born there, I should say. And India was a colony of the Brits. So you're going to see some. And oftentimes with British colonies, just like the Americas were a British colony, you're going to see cultural influences, there's a contingent of Catholic Indians coming from India. But there's a number of other religions, obviously, in India. They've had Hinduism is practiced there, Islam is practiced there, as well as Christianity. So he has really been a spokesperson for the religious right. So he has been in line with these people. He is a president of a Catholic college. So he promotes Christianity. He promotes Christian precepts, as well as hardline, far-right conservative views. Lo and behold, within the last few days, at some conference, he announces that he has a fiance, some fine young tender thing, that allegedly stayed in his hotel room. He's 51 or 52. She's in her late 20s. Not that it's an issue with me. Not that is an issue with me. I'm not into the ageism thing. But he is married. So I believe the timing on this is just, it's maddening. He's a nut. Why would you jeopardize your whole thing, your whole shtick? And I said, this is what it is. His shtick is conservative beliefs. So you are right. You know, conservative beliefs, family beliefs. Family is front and center in the conservative, the far right conservative message. He is one of the top messengers. He announces or comes up, shows with his girlfriend in tow, the very day that he's getting a divorce. The same day he's getting a divorce, he's announcing that this woman, I can't recollect her name. I'll get it in a moment. The new quote unquote chick is his fiance. Captain, what is this? What is this? Explain.
Well, you're dealing with a situation where someone says, this is some parents across America and across the world say, they tell you, do as I say, not as I do. Now, from a political standpoint, From a political standpoint, when you say this and you do something else, there's a term for that. You messed up. Now you're being hypocritical in that situation. But from a religious standpoint, especially if you're a Christian, and I was raised as a Christian, so I know this to be true. Catholicism is a form of Christianity. You can do your evil 6 days a week and then repent for your sins on Sunday and hit the reset button. Now, that's not what they're supposed to be doing. That's what a lot of them are doing. Not every Christian does this, but that's what a lot of them are doing. So when you get involved with religion, from the Christian standpoint, a lot of times, you do your evil, you messed up, and then you repent for it. I should not have done this. I should not have done that, even though it looks like you're a hypocrite. But when you in the religion actually allows for that. So we're dealing with two things. From the political standpoint, we do not allow that. We jump right on your neck. So what are you talking about? What are you talking about? You say drugs is bad, and then you're out doing drugs. That's a hypocrite. Not saying that's what he did here, but that's just to give you an analogy into what I'm talking about. In religion, if you say drugs is bad, and then you happen to be caught doing drugs, or if you say God does not want you doing drugs, and you happen to be caught doing drugs, you repent, you tell the congregation to forgive you, everyone's upset, but it's okay. You understand? Because that's based on the religion standpoint. So you're dealing with two things here. Either way, it doesn't look good. Doesn't look good. Because when you're touting religion, when you have a certain political stance, you have a tendency to be on a podium. So people are looking up to you, and you're somewhat looking down, whether we realize it or not. And that's something you never want to do. You're supposed to be looking eye to eye. So these people that we build up, most of the time, you're going to get your feelings hurt because they're not at that standard. They're just like everybody else. And that's what happened here in this situation. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, you know, I got to get more information as to the religious standpoint of King's College. I mean, right now I'm seeing that it's called an evangelical Christian school. If it is truly an evangelical Christian school, and he has a wife, a young daughter, I believe his wife was a formerly Dixie Brew Breaker, 20-year marriage to her. I don't get so deep into his personal life to that degree. I know that the young woman in question, his fiance, is a Denise Odie Joseph, and she herself is a, from her own writing, she has a blog also out there. You may want to just Google Denise Odie Joseph, and one of her blog postings had something that was highly critical of ghetto culture. Now, you know, on this show, we're highly critical of ghetto culture too, but we do put it in the context of it is a culture among cultures. I think it's unfairly promoted, obfuscating other cultures within the black diaspora. That's one of the things I say. I don't like the fact that it comes out as being the singular black culture or is defined as solely black culture. Like that's all black people are. They're just ghetto people. It's not accurate. So the reason why I'm even mentioning that is that, again, this young woman, this now new fiance, she wrote a rather blistering piece on ghetto culture, and some are saying, well, this move is a ghetto move. And not only that, I read this quick blurb from her blog, and I've seen this kind of thing before. We spoke about this behind the scenes, Captain, where when she was talking about ghetto culture and really zeroing in on it, and even Dinesh D'Souza has a book from within the last year or two called The End of Racism, and he goes in on the failure of black folk is rooted in ghetto culture, which I might not disagree with, but these folks are not adept or adroit in putting it in context. Listen, we can critique just putting it in context, but some of these folks are able to do it and not put it in context. Anyway, when Denise does this, Denise Odie does this, she says something to the effect of, and even white kids are mimicking this behavior. As if it's okay for black folk to do this. My critique is it's a behavior. Take away the racial element of it. It's a behavior that is not good for blacks, for Latin folk, and for white people. But I've seen this even in black blogs when they critique someone like Krayshawn, the white female rapper who's from the Bay Area and says that she was raised in this environment. When she first came on the scene, and I believe her cousin, who uses the N-word and who was also white, when they go into this whole thing, even some of the black folks that look at it say, well, why does she speak that way? Why does she do that? And I'm saying, wait a minute, why do you do that? So she's this Odie person who is this fiance. I don't like the way these people frame their arguments. Not that the arguments aren't valid, but when you're making an argument, you better be clean and concise with what you say. And you better be able to back up what you say and do behaviorally. And that they have not done that. So here we have yet another hypocrite which boggles my mind. You don't mess with your business. You don't mess with your brand. So this guy must be some kind of nut. You know, these constant themes. Now we're seeing an unraveling. I believe, you know, hey, I critique liberals and I critique conservatives. I like consistent behavior. That's what makes what a person stands for it makes it easier to digest when the messenger is straight. So far from what Obama does, how successful Obama is because until we see something different, he is a straight character. He has been steadfast in his personal moves. Let me repeat that. He has been steadfast in his personal moves. Dinesh D'Souza, I don't think so. This is real sloppy. You can't run an evangelical Christian school that promotes family and marriage and fidelity, and then come and then your whole shtick, Captain, is promoting this, and now you have your hot young tender on the side, and it's all right. You lose all credibility. The house of cards has fallen. Any closing remarks before we move along?
I agree. I totally agree. You lose credibility. Absolutely. I'm right there on the same page. Hypocrite, hypocrite, hypocrite.
All right. I want to talk about something more for the, the gossip sect. Chris Brown, Rihanna.
Yeah.
In a certain kind. First of all, I don't like to shed too much light on minstrelsy.
There we go.
Or coonery. You know, I'm not really into that. But there's an aspect of this new, another brewing story, another burgeoning story that for some reason, like you go to these ghetto-centric blogs, you go to these lower-tier blogs, whether it's Bossip, whether it's Media Takeout, or any of these other websites, and they're very popular. They'll talk about Chris Brown and Rihanna and their own personal foibles and whatever, their own situations. But there's a thing going on now in upstate New York from this high school. There was a high school pep rally that had one of these infamous blackface routines. 21st century, new millennium, we're still seeing blackface. And, you know, I've gone over and gone into the history of blackface. Blackface minstrelsy dates back to the 1800s, Captain. To the 1800s. From the 1800s all down through Al Jolson, that whole scene. And in the 21st century, we still see people riding blackface, literally treating dark skin, brown skin, as a costume. Black skin, from certain white racist perspectives, still is a costume, still is an oddity. Just a little melanin causes people to shake, rattle, and roll. Shake, rattle, and roll. You know? I mean, it boggles the mind. We don't promote primitivism in this endeavor on our show. Let me repeat that. We do not promote primitivism. We're going to give you tech news. We're going to give you urban alternative music. We're going to give you something different. We're not going to give you coonery and just wild allegations. We try to give you information and a little bit of entertainment and some good music. Let's have a good old time and let's learn. Let's learn together. But this whole perspective, I grow tired, Captain. And sometimes folks feel that we don't get into the racial thing enough. You know, because I don't expect anything better from racists. I'm more into getting into what we can solve on our own. But every once in a while, I'm going to have to raise my head on this stuff because it's crazy. Again, I'll quickly say that Rihanna and Chris Brown are no talents, and they're a bunch of minstrels. They make asses of themselves publicly on a day-to-day basis. There's always something going on with these two. Smoking weed publicly, not that you should do it privately, but it's another matter when you do it publicly. Aberrant behavior, a lot of loose talk, a lot of loose living. I mean, you know, you would want to represent yourself, maybe represent your ethnicity. I think we have to bring back, Captain, the whole thing of you're a credit to your race. You know, many years ago or in recent years, when someone told you you are a credit to your race, it used to be very condescending. But now I almost feel like we have to bring that back. And these folks are not credits to their race. They're just not. But it doesn't mean that they're worthy of of a minstrel show on the part of these white racist teens. All right, let's go into the actual news story. This is a news piece on Chris Brown and Rihanna, this actual blackface incident from this upstate New York high school. Hold on.
And there's trouble brewing in one Southern Tier school district. The Waverly School District is gaining national attention over what some students are calling a racist and insensitive pep rally. WENY-TV's Walter Smith Randolph joins us live in the studio with more. Walter, this story is really gaining traction on social media and the web.
That's right, Laura. It all started with a CNN iReport. Now, that's where CNN viewers can upload their own reporting. This iReport was posted by a Waverly High School graduate. He says on Friday, students dressed in blackface and acted out scenes of domestic violence at a school pep rally in front of parents, teachers, students, and administrators. This image you see on your screen is allegedly three Waverly students acting out a skit of Chris Brown beating Rihanna. The white students allegedly painted their faces black. Now, this story was published yesterday morning and has received more than 15,000 views so far. People are firing back on both sides of the issue. On Twitter, some people are saying they are ashamed of their high school. Others are saying the skit was harmless. Some people are also saying this isn't the first time students at Waverly have performed a skit in blackface. They're saying the same thing happened last year at homecoming when students portrayed Tiger Woods. Now, we're reaching out to Waverly High School's administration. We'll let you know if we get a response. Also, we want to know what you think. Log on to WNYTV's Facebook page and comment on this story. Reporting live in the studio, Walter Smith Randolph, WNYTV News. Laura?
All right. Thank you, Walter, for that
All right, folks. We had a caller. Again, folks, the call-in number, don't be scared. Again, if the caller or callers, feel free to come on back. We have plenty of time to discuss this or any other topic you'd like to discuss for this evening. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Now we're talking about the Chris Brown, Rihanna skit, this pep rally, where you had white students that donned, I guess, darkening makeup, and then they acted out this abuse incident from a few years ago between Rihanna and Chris Brown. I mean, it's really a double slap, really. Not that I'm really – it's not really about defending these two. You know, I don't think they're worthy of defense, but I think that the incident for what it is, the abusive incident is not something to make light of. Beating on a woman is not something to make light of. So that's – on one level, that's problematic. And on the other level is the actual blackface thing. And this is what we talk about consistently on AfroNerd. This is what's problematic about minstrelsy. We have been so lax, Captain. I want you to come in on this actually. This is my opinion. It seems like we've been so lax on bad representation, that this bad representation has allowed or makes it easier for people to clown us. And I'm speaking in a tribal way now. For black folk to be clowned without rebuttal. I remember years ago when something went down that didn't smell right, that didn't pass the smell test, there was a contingent of folk that would come out and slam you. You weren't allowed to get away with this stuff. But now I see instances, you know, one thing after another, consistently of just stuff that people are able to get away with without rebuttal. Blackface, 21st century, it's cool. And now folks say, well, you know, maybe it's not racist. You know, it's harmless. Oh, really? All right, we have the caller back. Let's open up the lines. Hey, maybe I'm looking at it wrong, but to me, it's pretty foul in any century, but especially in the new millennium. It's crazy. All right, opening up the lines. Caller, welcome to AfroNerd Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, 704.
Hi, my name is Angel. I'm calling from North Carolina.
Welcome.
Thank you. I just wanted to – I'm sorry, let me turn this down. It's throwing me off. Okay, I just wanted to comment on some of the things that you were talking about. namely a lot of the racism that's going around, it's being thrown Obama's way, and the blackface that you just brought up, that incident.
Right.
I think a lot of what we're experiencing now is just coming full circle, and I think is results or the consequences of assimilation and integration. Integration is great. I'll use the famous, you know, line, I have white friends too and everything. But at some point, I think we missed the boat. I think we really should have looked within ourselves and should have kept within our own community a lot more than we did. And so now it's, everybody is so assimilated and it's like you're conditioning your children to be like that. So when they see blackface, they're already conditioned not to get mad. It's not a big deal. It's not really racist. It was just a comedy skit. They don't mean anything by it, that type of thing. Or, you know, the racism that's being thrown out towards Obama and, you know, like wearing the shirts, like bring the white back to the White House. It was always there. It was just, you know, as long as we weren't on their level or what they perceived as their level, it was okay, as long as we stayed in our place. But since Obama got to the White House, to like the ultimate power situation, then it's an issue. And then everybody wants to do everything they can, not everybody, but them, I guess I'll say, wants to do everything they can to discredit him and to, quote unquote, put him in his place and, quote unquote, keep us in our place. And I think that's why we've seen a lot, well, I guess seen an increase in a lot of racial incidents that's been happening just because, you know, they want to keep us in our place, basically. And I just think that had we zigged when we zagged, like, we'd be a lot better off.
Well, you know what? I want the captain to weigh in on this. I want you to hold on first. I want you to hold on. We're going to talk to you for a moment. I want to open this up a little bit. Captain, what are your thoughts on what the young lady's talking about? She's saying that, you know, integration, this is the fault of integration, that we, that folks are becoming more comfortable in doing this without any kind of rebuttal. I'm not sure if I really agree with that, though. I think we saw this pre- and post-integration. It's the response that I think, on the response on the part of black people that's troublesome. But this has always been going
well,
on.
Well, that's what I guess that's what I'm trying to say, too. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. That the
right.
The response is like, it's not like you're not going to have, you know, marches and people protesting or complaining because it's we're so conditioned now and we do it to our children and it's like it's okay now. Like it's not a big deal anymore. It's okay to be disrespected. It's, you know, it's okay to be made fun of. It just, I do. I think it's a product, a consequence of assimilation and integration.
Captain, what do you think about her assertion?
Well, in essence, America has never dealt with their race issues from slavery till now, coming out of slavery since 1865. They've never dealt with it. Now, also what's happening with the younger generation is that the younger generation is cut off from that knowledge. They know nothing about their history. So a young person viewing something like this, they will not necessarily know what blackface is. It's just something that looks, hey, they're making fun of Chris Brown or a bunch of idiots anyway from time to time and Rihanna, and that's how they'll perceive it. But a lot of that comes, again, from the parenting standpoint, not letting the children know exactly what rich history that actually they do have, what black people definitely went through in this country to get to this point where you can have PlayStation, Xbox, get a college degree, get a job making $100,000 a year if you push and you're lucky. They don't, you know, they don't know about that history. They don't. They're totally cut off from that total standpoint. And also, you know, it is. I feel, you know, you definitely have a point with far as the integration. I think we would have been better if we would have built ourselves up.
Right.
From that standpoint, totally build us up, build a foundation. But in order to build your foundation, you must have knowledge of self first. You have to know who we are. A lot of people here, a lot of black people, they're not attached to Africa. They don't know anything about African history. So if you're cut off from that history, what happens here. You go crazy in this North America here. And that's in essence what a lot of us have done. Not all of us, but a lot of us have done. And that's the reality of the situation. So in order for us to go forward, you have to have knowledge of self. Then you can begin to do for self. Then once you do that, then you can, you know, assimilate and do everything else, and everything is fine because you have a foundation. You have an anchor. When there's no anchor, look what happens to the ship. The ship flies all over the ocean. And that's in essence what's happening right here at this given time.
Well, that's true. I totally agree about the foundation. This, I guess I keep taking it back to integration. I believe, like, when that happens, we were cut off from that history. Like, because then when they're teaching us, they're not going to teach us about our foundation and our history and our ancestors and, you know, what we went through and actually what we were doing before we went through slavery, like, you know, the history beyond that. So, you know, like, all we know, like, oh, you were slaves and we freed you, and, you know, be grateful. And that's it. Nobody knows. Like, I was just having a conversation the other day, and it was actually a conversation on Facebook, but a conversation nonetheless, with someone, you know, about Columbus Day. And they brought that up, and they were like, you know, wow, we still celebrating this when we know that, you know, that this basically was a lie. And, you know, I'm like, well, you know, I agree. And we got to talking about the schools teaching history, and I was like, you know, you really don't, coming up through an American school system, for the most part, you really don't learn your history until you get to college. And that's if you're lucky, if you take the right classes with the right professor or instructor or whatever you want to call them. You know, it's like right now I'm taking an American literature class, and we're reading Frederick Douglass and Harriet Jacobs and some of the other people from that time, and it's like, oh, I didn't know this. They didn't teach us anything about this. And at the beginning of this American literature book is going through the history of slavery even before us, before we as Black Americans went through slavery, and just the history of the discovery of America before Columbus got here. And it's like these things, if you decide not to go past high school and nobody teaches you and nobody piques your interest, things you would never know. So I agree. The foundation is cut off. And
well, you know,
I just take that back to integration, because then it wasn't important anymore, because now we can have what they have.
Well, you know what?
Sorry, go ahead.
I want to mention something to you. This is just food for thought. And I think about this. Actually, it's funny you brought this up, because I've been thinking about this for the last couple of days, the notion of integration and what it has done. And I think you are conflating integration and assimilation as if they're one and the same, because they're not. Integration is more of a legal designation. It has to do with public access. So just because integration is the law of the land, meaning that I can go into a white establishment, I can go to Burger King, I can go to a movie theater, that kind of thing, that is integration. Assimilation means that you literally are able to move in culturally and socially with the predominant culture.
Right.
And I don't think, this is something I thought about in the last few days, this has been a Frankenstein experiment for the last couple of hundred years. I wouldn't doubt your surname is probably European, just as my name is European, just
mm-hmm.
as Captain Kirk's surname is European. But if you have a name like Washington or Jones or Braddock, those aren't commonplace names from the continent of Africa. Barack Obama has an African name, authentically.
Right.
We do not have that. You follow what I'm saying? So it is a Frankenstein experiment, and I think it, on the part of many Black folk, I don't think that many of us have made up our mind as to whether we want to assimilate. Because when you talk about some of the prison fashion that some of our youth are into, the sagging pants and
mm-hmm.
our Black males wearing earrings and that kind of thing, it is defiance. It is a way of telling your prospective employer that you don't control me. You don't own me. So I don't know about the assimilation thing. We have not successfully assimilated. That is the issue. We haven't decided how we want to assimilate. You follow what I'm saying? Our experience is distinct from other ethnicities. We were brought in against our will, in the hulls of slave ships. Irishmen, Chinese, Italian, they came of their own volition, and they came with their culture intact. Our culture was destroyed. So we don't know what we want to do. It's not the integration part. It's the assimilation part. You have other ethnicities that are able to, quote, unquote, integrate and assimilate on their own terms. When someone from Asia or someone from Japan comes here, they do business, they socialize with the predominant culture, and then they go home to little Tokyo. They go home to little Italy. You follow what I'm saying? They're able to assimilate and to integrate on their own terms, and they're able to still go back to their cultural base. Black folk are not able to or do not effectively assimilate, integrate, and go back to their own cultural base and do commerce and promote their own cultural mores. That is the problem. I don't really agree with you that it's integration and assimilation is the problem. It's that we don't know what we want to do. We haven't figured it out the way other people have, and that is it. And it is in part based on our experiences. We didn't come here voluntarily, and now that we're here, we can't go back. We can't go back. We wouldn't know. If you put me in the middle of Detroit, I would be able to figure it out. If you put me in the middle of Super Bowl, you put me in the middle of some African country, you put me in the middle of Uganda, I wouldn't know what to do.
But this
you put
is true.
Me in the middle, you put me in the middle of Oakland, I'd be able to figure it out. That is the issue. Listen, we appreciate your call. We appreciate your support. We got more topics to get into. Continue listening. Excellent question.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. What do you think, Catherine, about what I was talking about?
Well, great point. Yeah, definitely a great point. Again, as I said, you know, and you hit on some of the points that I essentially mentioned. You cut off from Africa. There's no base. You're essentially an anchor. You're essentially a ship in the water with no anchor, and no one's driving the ship. So what does the ship do? It floats all over the place. You float all over the place. You know, you might know the waters because you've been there for so long, but you're still floating all over the place. That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. You have to attach to something, and you made a very good point when you said the Asian man. Asian man has a base. That's why you have to watch the Asian man, because eventually that might become the predominant situation, you know, if that matters to you. You know, if anyone who's listening, if that matters, who's really dominant, what have you, you have to watch them because they have a base. They have a base. They can come to North America and go back to their base. Black man, here in North America, what do you have? What do you have? You're just running around here, floating around, trying to figure it out, never really figuring it out. You know, you don't attach with Africa. Africa does not attach with you. There you go. It's a big issue. And that's been our issue. Read Marcus Garvey. Read about that, and you'll see what I'm talking about for those people. Marcus Garvey. Read about that. Read about that particular individual. A lot you can learn from there when you're taking your black study classes and everything else. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, a few weeks ago, maybe a show or two ago, I spoke about coon songs. That's what the terminology is. Not to be disrespectful, folks. That's what they were called. Speaking of minstrel music, I liken some of what we listen to now. You can make a blow-by-blow comparison between some of the stereotypical, heinous commercial end of hip-hop. And we do play, under the urban alternative umbrella, we do play plenty of hip-hop music. Hip-hop, acid jazz, black rock, you name it, we play everything that conventional radio programs refuse to play. But we are highly critical of the commercial end of black music or hip-hop music. And when I mention, quote-unquote, coon songs from the early part of the 20th century, one of the songs that I mentioned a few shows ago was called Every Race Has a Flag But the Coon. To the previous caller, you might want to look this up. This is history. The actual name of the song is called Every Race Has a Flag But the Coon. And that song was put out there. You know, we've been going through this. You know, that it's full circle, Captain. In the 21st century, you have folks dressed up as your celebrities in blackface 100 years post this song. This song was meant to clown black people, and it's very telling. You take away our culture, and you have a song condemning you for not having a culture. You take it away. It's akin to raping somebody and then asking the victim, what's wrong with you? So what's wrong with you? After you rape them, what's your problem? So when they have a song called Every Race Has a Flag But the Coon, it ties into the young lady's assertion about assimilation and integration. We haven't determined what we want to do. We're still Frankenstein's monsters in this grand experiment. I believe in humanity, Captain. I don't believe in someone being better than someone else. I don't believe in any kind of notions of racial superiority. I don't believe in any kind of primitivism. Everyone is the same biologically. The problem is culturally, culture and race and politics, all these things have intertwined to make life difficult for certain groups. How you deal with it is of a different concern. And we, tribal now, as black people, have to make a decision as to what we want to do the way other folks have done it and are doing it. We're going to go to a quick musical break. But in closing, as I said, in dealing with other ethnicities, taking Jewish folk or Asian folk, these folks aren't necessarily liked by mainstream culture. And they don't necessarily like mainstream culture themselves, but they're able to freak it, to be colloquial. They're able to freak the culture according to their own rules. They dip in and they dip out. They get what they need to get and they go on home. So we need to be able to do the same thing, and we haven't decided whether we want to do that. When we do that, some of us are called sellouts. And yet, those folks that, as I said, wear the earrings and the pants sagging, they're defiant. They say that you don't control me, but it has no end game, Captain. That's my concern. If your saggy pants and your earrings, all that stuff, would be working for you, if it was working for you, allowing you to move to the next level, I wouldn't say anything. The problem is being defiant with no end game. It's just a sucker's bet. It is what it is. All right, folks. Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. Call in number 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Going into another groove, always giving you the best of urban alternative music, trying to give you something different. We can't keep on listening to the same old. Black folks are doing the black rock thing. I'm about done with the hip-hop thing, to be honest with you. I listen to it. I still listen to it. I listen to a type of hip-hop. But that commercial garbage, man, it's got to go. I'm sorry. This is King of Pain, a cover of the Police's classic. King of Pain by a band called Pain. That's the name of the group. A band called Pain. Let's groove, folks, some black rock. We'll be right back.
There's a little black spot on the sun today. It's the same old thing as yesterday. There's a black hat caught in a high street town. There's a black pool rag and the wind won't stop. I sit in the forest and the pouring rain. When the world turns circles run around my brain, I can stop a storm and you can hear me dream. Lord, it's mightiest to me to be the king of pain. Never.
Once again, giving a little bit of Black Rock, let me shout out the Black Rock Coalition. Definitely check out blackrockcoalition.org as well as afropunk.com. Also, Bold as Love, Rob, a friend of the show, Rob Fields' outfit, boldaslove.us. Check out all three. There's plenty of websites that are promoting alternative black music. And I was thinking, Captain, I was looking at a neighbor cutting grass a few days ago. And I'm looking at this guy, and I'm saying to myself, some of us are on repeat, Captain. Some of us are on – there's like a black script, When I saw this gentleman cutting grass, he had his do-rag on, and he had a Rockaware jacket. And I looked at him and said, why is this guy following this script. Why do I see this look, this ghetto-centric army look? No, if you look at the army are required to dress in the same way. And we've developed this kind of army where we do the same thing. We're always into the same meme, as we always say, one of our favorite words, the same meme. And I don't know. It's a little tired. So even to the caller that came in, I believe she said she was a student. I think she's on the road to, well, I don't know how she is personally, but I hope she continues to listen to our show, because I'm not telling her if she's a Weezy fan, if she's a Drake fan. Okay, that's fine. But especially when you're in school, you need to expose yourself to other things so that people don't perceive you in a stereotypical fashion, and they don't perceive you as having the same or reading from the same black script. When I see young folk in the car next to me when I'm in traffic, and it's always rap music, nothing else is going on. There's no jazz, there's no black rock, there's no acid jazz, there's no funk. It's always the same old tired black script. And you got a black president in the White House who is showing you that you can rise above that script. It's tired. Come on now. It's quotidian. You know what I'm going to bring that word in. It is commonplace. It has become quotidian to always do the same old thing all the time. Commonplace. Cut it out. Heck, I'm looking on eBay to get me a Black Sabbath t-shirt. Black guy's not supposed to wear a Black Sabbath t-shirt. I'm looking at Bad Brains t-shirts. I'm looking at Fishbone t-shirts. I'm looking at Funkadelic t-shirts.
Oh, now you're talking.
You know what I mean?
Funkadelic and Fishbone.
Yeah. I have to flip the script on these folks. I have to flip the script on you people. I'm not going to wear a Young Cash Money Millionaire t-shirt. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to wear a Nicki Minaj t-shirt. You know I'm not going to wear that hair hat clown, Caucasian hair hat mistress on my body. I'm not doing that. Stop, for the listeners, for the black listeners, black and brown listeners, I'm calling you out specifically. Stop riding the stereotypical carousel. Get off the carousel. Flip the script, explore other things, explore beyond what people perceive to be black, which is what President Obama is doing and has done effectively. There's a whole discourse going on now, Captain. I was on Rob Redding a few days ago. I'm always on this young man's show because he's close to what we do. He's not us. So I do look out for like-minded people. He misses the mark on occasion. But I was on there, and I was being my Afro-nerdic self. And they went into this whole thing. We only got about 5 minutes remaining anyway, Captain. I want to go into this quickly. There was this thing about Minister Farrakhan coming out before the debate. He was giving advice to President Barack Obama about how he should act going into the second debate with Governor Mitt Romney. And he used the term, he needs to act a little bit black or a little bit more black. And sometimes on his show, on Mr. Redding's show, they go into this authentic black thing. And it's a theme with them. They're running with the script too. He needs to be more black. I say, you know what? I don't think so. I don't think so. Because if you do it the black way that many blacks think, he will stay losing. Our scorecard is not that good, Captain, if doing it the quote-unquote black way. There's a certain type of black way. Maybe he is already doing it the black way. He's just not doing it your black way. They want the President Snoop Dogg, President Goldie the Pimp way. I'm not riding with that. That's what black folks want. Black folks want somebody to get nasty in the halls of Congress and slap up those balding white men and tell it like it is. It's never going to happen. Leave that to Chris Rock. Leave that to old Richard Pryor routines. Leave that to fantasy. Leave it to Dave Chappelle. But for real, for real, for real, no, it's not going down like that. He needs to be a little bit more black. I don't think so. Black folks stay losing. Any thoughts while I'm trying to find this clip? That's what I'm going on because I'm trying to find it. I just downloaded it.
Well, the reality is the black way or the quote-unquote thug way, thug it out. We always speak about that on this show here. Where does that get you? Where does it really get you at the end of the day? Well, we know the thug way, what they call the black way or the pimp way, where does it get you? Get you locked up, get you shot up, murdered. Doesn't work. And if it did work, we'd have to endorse it. We'd have to say, you know what? This is the way to do things because it does work. But the reality of it is, it doesn't work. Doesn't work. You know, it just doesn't work. Sorry to say. And that's the reality of the situation in the modern day era in 2012. Doesn't work. Never worked. Never worked. There you go.
You know, I mentioned on the last show, I'm still trying to find this clip, by the way, so I'm stalling a little bit, but I'm being honest also, that, you know, I mentioned last time out, I used Dr. Martin Luther King as well as the great Jackie Robinson, that imagine if Jackie Robinson, who was very articulate, he was a certain kind of ball player that was needed in order for certain things to happen because the skeletal makeup of the American society, he had to be who he was and to make the sacrifice in order for all of us to progress. I was talking getting into this discourse with the Oracle, my father, the tangential producer of the show. I was telling him that, you know, now we talk about the minstrels and the clowns in sports. You know, now it's, you know, we went through a phase where we saw Dennis Rodman wearing a dress. We saw all kinds of fools, Captain. All kinds of fools in sports. But, you know, and we kind of, you know, God bless them. You can kind of accept that the fools are able to come in, but there had to be the straight guy before you got the fool. So before you get this fantasy President Snoop Dogg, five or six black presidents from now, there's got to be the Jackie Robinson archetype. There has to be. This is history, folks. I'm not giving you rocket science. It's the way the world works. But this whole meme, this whole script, black script, Negro script, that some are insisting that we read from, it's a joke. Cut it out. Knock it off.
Well, there's only almost a minute left, so I guess we're not going to find that clip.
No, I just downloaded it. Folks, we're going to wait till Sunday. Sunday's going to be another fiery show. We've got about a minute remaining. Any closing thoughts, Captain, about this show and going forward?
Listen, if you want to listen to Chris Brown and Rihanna and Nicki Minaj, feel free to do so. That's your prerogative. You know, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. It's not a problem. But also get into listening and checking out other things. Do not be narrow-minded, closed-minded. See whatever else is out there. That's all that we're saying here. So there you have it, friends. We'll see you Sunday at 6 p.m., first the comic shop, and then at 7, we get into the Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk segment. Have a good evening, folks.
All right, people. We'll do it once again. And let's go out on a mashup, Hall & Oates, Marvin Gaye. See you on Sunday. It's been real.
I need some love. Wake up.